This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Judith Jacobs with Ti Xiao Yik. So today we will be looking at a highly transmissible viral disease that infects thousands of people in Malaysia every year, causing hundreds of deaths. And it's not COVID-19. We're talking about dengue. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, dengue doesn't get as much attention as COVID-19. So we'll be looking at how the MCO has affected the prevalence of dengue and what lessons we can adopt from the COVID-19 pandemic in tackling this endemic disease.
Yes. So if you have anything you'd like to share with us regarding our efforts for many, many years to try and combat dengue, do tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. So, you know, in Malaysia, we live under this constant threat of a highly contagious disease. It's caused by a deadly virus. If you look at all the numbers that we've seen over the years, or in recent years at least 10,000 people are infected every month. And last year, there were 130,000 cases in the country, which represented a 61% rise from 2018. And we also recorded 182 deaths.
Yes, and with all the attention on COVID-19 in recent times, it's understandable that you might have forgotten about dengue or maybe chosen to do so, but it hasn't gone anywhere. The Aedes mosquitoes are still breeding and people are still getting sick from dengue fever every day.
Yes, so just a refresher, dengue is caused by the dengue virus, and we humans get infected by the virus through the bite of the Aedes mosquitoes that usually breed in stagnant water. So humans who are bitten, we can pass the virus back to another mosquito if we are bitten while we are infected, because the virus stays in our bloodstream. And from there, you know, that mosquito will merrily bite someone else and infect them, and that's how the disease just keeps transmitting, exactly like any other infectious disease that we're talking about today.
That's right. And in Malaysia, dengue is an urban problem, as Aedes mosquitoes breed abundantly in urban areas and have lots of unsuspecting humans to feed on. We are adding to the problem, of course, by packing more people into already densely populated urban areas and providing the mosquitoes with perfect breeding conditions, because we clog up our drains, we allow our waste to pile up indiscriminately. Just take a walk around your neighbourhood and you are likely to spot several rubbish piles filled up pots and water containers, discarded tires, all of which could contain Aedes larvae.
Absolutely. So the dengue disease can present in several ways. One could be as an asymptomatic infection, where you're infected with a virus but you don't have any symptoms. Or you could have dengue fever. Or number three, you could possibly have one of two life-threatening manifestations, such as dengue hemorrhagic fever or dengue shock syndrome, and these can lead to death. So globally, it is estimated that there are approximately 50 million to 200 million dengue infections every year, 500,000 cases of severe dengue, and over 20,000 dengue-related deaths. And again, we're talking every year, these numbers.
That's right. And, you know, granted, the number of COVID-19 infections and deaths worldwide have far surpassed dengue, making it imperative that we continue to devote our efforts and attention to COVID-19. However, we shouldn't let a preventable disease like dengue rob us of our lives and health either. If you've ever had dengue or had a loved one suffer from it, you will know that it takes an incredible toll on your health and involves a long hospital stay.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, during this COVID-19 pandemic itself, you've probably heard of at least a few relatives or friends who contracted dengue, and this really tells us that the disease hasn't gone anywhere. So to find out exactly what's happening in terms of dengue prevalence, we have on the line with us Dr. B. Venugopalan, Senior Public Health Consultant and Deputy State Health Director from the Public Health Division in the Selangor State Health Department. Dr. Venu, thank you for speaking to us today. Firstly, could you share the latest statistics on dengue cases nationwide, as well as in Selangor, which is usually one of the hardest hit states, and also looking particularly at the MCO period, which started on the 18th of March?
Okay, start off with for the whole country first. As of 9th of May, this year, that means last Saturday, cumulatively in the country, there were a total of 41,812 cases notified, of which Selangor contributed 24,744 cases, which is almost about 59% of the national cases. Now, if you are talking about what happened during the MCO, which effectively started around epidemic 12 or on the 16th of March, very surprising, the cases actually dropped dramatically. From just before the MCO, we are seeing about almost 1,700 cases a week. And by the time we reached about 4 or 5 weeks into the MCO, the cases had dropped to about slightly more than 550 cases. So there was actually a drop of almost 60% during the MCO period.
So what do you think could account for that dramatic decrease in cases during the MCO period?
Okay. In fact, we had several discussions on this. And I think the MCO period was actually quite unique. It's actually a very huge, I would say, a social experimental period where everyone is forced to stay indoors. So I think what has come out from what we have seen so far, this lends a lot of weight to our hypothesis that dengue in Selangor is driven by outdoor biting. You see, the dengue mosquito can breed both indoors and outdoors. And indoor biting, yes, there are cases, but a majority, we always felt, was due to outdoor biting. And I think this this MCO period has proved this. You see, what happens in an MCO period is there are two ways how dengue cases can come down. One is a person doesn't go out and get bitten by an infective mosquito. So that cuts the transmission risk. I mean, there are mosquitoes flying around, but they have no one to bite. Second scenario is, if you remember, in dengue, almost 70% of the cases are what we call subclinical or asymptomatic. That means they have dengue, but very minimal symptoms. They go out, do their normal work with no problem. So during an MCO period, one of the other hypotheses looking into why the cases came down is these 70% of people who are mildly symptomatic, they carry the virus in their bloodstream. So if they are prevented from going out of their house, the likelihood that they infect the mosquitoes outside also reduces.
So what was the impact of the MCO on vector control activities like fogging, for example?
Because everyone was restricted to home and outdoor activities was curtailed, effectively, no vector control measures were done also during this period. That means we were not doing fogging, we were not doing larvaciding, you know, we were not doing house-to-house inspection. In fact, all vector control activities had actually virtually stopped. Because of the nature of the MCO, we are not able to move between areas, if you remember. And also, we cannot enter houses. Whatever little we did was a bit of outdoor fogging, but nothing very intensive. It was just the bare minimum. And even despite that, cases went out. I just wanted to qualify this.
So then, were there any changes to Aedes breeding grounds during this MCO period?
When we surveyed the same areas we had assessed earlier, the breeding intensity is still the same.
Okay, so Dr. Venu, taking into account what you found during the MCO period, what can we learn from that and apply that to the dengue control approach moving forward?
Okay, I think the first thing is the cornerstone of dengue control is still what we call source reduction. Basically, remove any breeding or potential breeding areas. That is the gold standard. But until we get to such level of cleanliness, such level of community awareness, we have to take measures, other measures to reduce the risk of a person being bitten by a mosquito outdoors. And one of the things now we are looking into is pushing the habit of using repellents as an everyday practice by the community. You see, before COVID, no one actually bothered about washing their hands or even shaking hands. So there was a huge behavior change.
Yes.
So what we are trying also to look into this is whether we can also now start looking into this, creating a behavior change whereby using repellents during the peak biting time is one of the key initiatives which we are exploring at the current moment.
So what kind of approach do you think will be most effective to get people to change their behaviours?
It is multi-pronged. We have the traditional health education messages through the social media posters, the whole series of campaigns which we are planning now. But I think finally, what we have learned from COVID is people change their behavior when they perceive it as a personal threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless an individual, the community feels that if they don't do this, they will get affected. Then only you have some sort of significant behavior change.
And so now movement restrictions are already easing and people are out and about again. So what do you think is going to be the impact in the next few weeks?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's already the swing has already started. I told you we reached a low of about 550 cases. Now it's creeping up slowly up to about 700 cases. You see, I think one of the challenges of dengue is it has become very stale. In the sense that people are so used to dengue now that they are not really bothered about the messages we are giving. They don't take an initiative of ensuring their own house doesn't become a breeding place. They don't take measures to ensure that they don't litter the environment because they only get concerned when it affects them directly. Either they themselves get sick or their close relatives get sick or unfortunately passed away. Until that happens, they are so desensitized because the disease has been around for almost 30 years plus. So that is one of our huge challenges when we look at dengue, how to reignite the interest. And, it's still work in progress, but we have the state government, the Selangor state government, and the local authorities looking into the newer initiatives that we have just discussed.
Thank you for speaking to us, Dr. Venu. That was Dr. B. Venugopalan, Senior Public Health Consultant and Deputy State Health Director from the Public Health Division at the Selangor State Health Department. And on his note about, you know, how people... we've become desensitized and we are not taking the right measures just to ensure that our house and surrounding areas are clean. We also have B Rays on Twitter commenting that the breeding of Aedes mosquitoes is due to civic issues. People are just uncivilized with the way they dump rubbish. And I absolutely agree.
I think we've seen it in our neighborhoods. You know, there's just suddenly there'll be a pile of rubbish that just appears overnight.
That's right.
In the middle of, you know, like on the side of the road suddenly.
That's right. You know? Never in front of their own houses.
Of course not. It will come somewhere, you know, some random part of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. you know, where fortunately no one is staying, but still.
Yes.
Surely you can't, surely you can put it in rubbish bins or rubbish bags and dispose of it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely perfect breeding spots, you know. And so, as Dr. Venu mentioned, the most effective way at the end of the day to control dengue is to prevent the mosquitoes from breeding. So, I mean, again, look around your house and within your community, you know, cover up those sort of containers and items that could collect rainwater or properly discard of them. And if you do need to use these containers at home, do make sure that you empty them out, clean and scrub them at least once a week. And scrubbing is to remove the mosquito eggs.
That's right. And protect yourself from mosquito bites. You know, wear long sleeve clothing and use mosquito repellent, as Dr. Venu said. And, you know, while you're sanitizing your hands, which I'm very sure you're doing now, make it a practice to slap on some repellent as well. And if possible, install window and door screens to prevent those mozzies from entering your house in the first place.
Yes. And, you know, if you do have signs and symptoms of dengue, don't be afraid to go to a clinic or hospital immediately for medical attention. You know, even if you're worried about COVID infection, not getting medical attention for dengue could be even worse.
That's right.
So the symptoms, you know, include sudden fever, especially fever that sort of spikes and goes down and goes up again, severe headache, pain behind the eyes, muscle or joint pains, nausea and vomiting, and rash, among others. So the key thing is just don't delay medical treatment. If you do need to go to the clinic or hospital, just take the necessary safety precautions to prevent any potential COVID infection as well. You know, I myself have seen posts from my acquaintances and friends on Facebook that they or their family members have had dengue, and it's terrible.
Yeah, I've had several family members have it, and it's, you know, such a debilitating disease. It is. You're out and you continue to be in a weakened state for weeks after.
Yes, that's right.
It really, and the thing is, it's quite preventable in that sense.
There are simple
measures that you can take to prevent yourself from getting bitten, from preventing the mosquitoes from breeding. But I think what you said is right. We become so desensitized. I remember when Dr. Venu was mentioning about, campaigns, in my mind, it popped up those posters with the big 80s mosquito.
There was a song for it, wasn't there?
Was there? I can't remember. But I'm so desensitized to it. I'm like, whatever,
But it's interesting the parallels that you can draw between the spread or the rise of COVID and dengue. It relates to human activities, unchecked human development activities that enable these viruses to really spread among us. And within us are the solutions as well. And are we going to take that seriously enough, That's a question that's perfect for Friday afternoon.
Tough questions, shall we, this Friday. But I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. But if you have any thoughts, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. If you'd like to get in touch with the Bigger Picture team, just look us up on Facebook, search for BFM The Bigger Picture, and drop us a message over there. If you miss any part of the show, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest. You can find us on the BFM app and also on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Live and Learn, it's our 22nd episode of Law and Behold. And today with my guests Firdaus Husni and Surendra Anand, we will be looking at the rights of undocumented migrants in Malaysia in the time of COVID-19. So, we're going to be talking about all those things that we've been seeing, the rounding up of, illegal undocumented migrants in Malaysia, and also the turning away of the Rohingya refugees, which happened a while ago as well, turning away their boats. So we're going to look and see whether that was actually lawful. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. For now, we'll leave you with CCR and Who'll Stop the Rain. This has been the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.